I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, buckle up. I don't know how else to say it, but Democrats in Washington state have lost their damn minds.
Maybe they might want to call me a monkey.
Governor Bob Ferguson and Attorney General Nick Brown send out advice to illegal immigrants to help them avoid ICE. And what happens if President Donald Trump decides to do away with the U.S. Department of Education? We're joined by an expert. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Ooh, good grief, folks. It's going to be one of those days. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I mean, Democrats have lost their minds. I just really don't know how else to put that. There have been some insane stuff that's happened over the weekend in Olympia, and it defies even your worst expectations of what lawmakers in our state would be focused on right now. And, you know, nationally, I feel like at least there's been some recognition from some Democrats that, hey, our party went way too far to the left. People didn't like it. Clearly, that's why Donald Trump got a second term. So maybe we need to lean into sort of moderacy to some extent. I mean, I know that not all Democrats have realized that, but I think there's at least been some recognition of that nationally. In Washington state, not at all. In Washington state, they're like, let's go further left than we've ever been before. New horizons. It's wild stuff. And on top of that, right, we have a $14 billion budget deficit. And we're more than halfway through the session. And Democrats in the legislature have shown no meaningful interest in trying to deal with that elephant in the room. And I don't know if they're just keeping busy pushing these really insane things because they want that to distract from the eventuality that they're going to push new taxes upon us. But it seems like these are things that they're just really supportive of, and they're emboldened by their massive majorities in Olympia. So they're going to use this opportunity to push through the most nutso things that they can push through in the craziest fashion they could possibly do it. So we have a few things that we need to discuss today. I have to start with the reparations thing. I'm sitting here going over this video this morning, and I'm just like, oh my God, I've never seen anything like this in 15 years happen on the floor in Olympia during debate. So we were the very first ones to report on the fact that Washington State 2 years ago passed something they called the Covenant Home Ownership Program, but it was just reparations. But because they packaged it in this little bow and called it the Covenant Home Ownership Program, the media didn't really catch on that this was just a reparations bill. And when it went into effect the first of last year, so I think it went into effect January 1st of 2024, that was when we reported on it because it had gone under the radar for me, frankly, in 2023, again, because it had been called that. And then you start to realize what it was, and the way that the current program existing today works is if you buy a home in Washington State, you have all these recorder's fees that you have to pay when you file documents. And so they added to those recorder's fees. And now, whether you know it or not, when you're buying a home in our state, you're paying into a reparations program. You have to pay hundreds of additional dollars to the recorder's office that goes into a fund where Black first-time homebuyers can get loans for down payment assistance. And those loans are averaging $120,000. So first, like homebuyers of any color, I mean, you could be a legitimate descendant of a slave and you're still paying into this reparations program. All the costs associated. And they want to whine about, oh, buying a home is so expensive and all this stuff. And it is. But they made it even more expensive by sneaking in this little fee where you go buy a home and all of a sudden, oh my God, the recorder's fees are like $1,000. Yeah, that's because you're paying into a reparations fund. So this program has now been in the works for a year, and shock of the century, a lot of people are using it. Of course they would, because buying a home is expensive. And if you can get the state of Washington simply because of the pigmentation of your skin, without any sort of proof that you or your family were directly discriminated against, if you can get the state of Washington to give you a zero interest loan for like $120,000 so you can afford to buy a home, of course you're going to do that. So a lot of people are doing it, right? Well, when they first passed this, they hung their hats on, well, these are just loans. They'll have to repay the loan, so it's not a big deal. They're just zero interest loans. And eventually they're going to give that money back to the state of Washington. Well, now, of course, comes House Bill 1696. And what does it do? House Bill 1696 says it's not a loan anymore. Now it's just a freaking gift, right? Now it's just a gift of taxpayer funds. And all those loans we've been handing out that average $120,000 a loan, well, we're never going to have you pay them back. So think about that. Think if someone, those of us who don't come from wealthy families, who saved, who scratched, who worked overtime, who took one, two, three jobs to be able to achieve the dream of home ownership, think of how hard it was for you. Think of how hard it was for you to save enough money for a down payment to buy your first home. Now imagine if taxpayers foot the bill on that for you and you never had to pay it back. It was a gift of taxpayer funds, $120,000 on average. That's what this bill, House Bill 1696, would do. And again, no proof that the Black first-time homebuyers who are benefiting from that program had ties to discrimination in the state of Washington decades ago. It's just, oh, your skin pigmentation is right, check. So here's a big fat check. So that's what they want to do. So this came on the House floor Thursday evening. And Republicans, I can understand where they were coming from. Just buckle up, you guys. This is going to get freaking nuts. I'm stunned by it. So if you're a Republican and it's a race-based bill, essentially, right? You're like, oh, God, how do I debate against this? Because you don't want them to call you a racist. So Republicans sort of ignored the glaring problem with this, which is that it's just unconstitutional. It's preferential treatment. And Republicans avoided having the debate about like a reparations program like this. It wouldn't withstand a legal challenge, but also it's just wrong, right? Like, you're not requiring any sort of proof. And what about Jewish people who were discriminated against? They're not included in this. So there's other groups out there that were impacted decades ago by housing policies because of their religion or this color of their skin or their national origin. But this one is only like for people of a certain skin color, right? So Republicans are like, let's not go there. Let's just make the most logical argument we can against this bill. And what is it? Well, we're in a $14 billion budget deficit. So maybe gifting millions and millions of dollars in taxpayer funds to people so they can purchase a home isn't the thing that we should be prioritizing. Here's a clip of Representative Travis Couture making that point.
I mean, and I sit on appropriations, so it's clear to me why we budget in certain cycles. Of course, we have a biennial budget and we have to balance a four-year outlook. And right now, it's not balancing.
Yeah, it's not balancing. So, you know, you have this program where right now, so you got the recorder's fees coming in, right? And it goes into this fund. And then people pull out of that fund when they're going to get this down payment reparations from the state. And right now, you have to pay it back. So it's sort of the idea is that the fund will continue to replenish itself. But right now, that fund's already depleted because so many people want to take advantage of this program. So when you turn around and you say now you don't even have to repay the money to the fund to help someone else, then the point Travis Couture and many other Republicans made on the floor is they're going to come back then and they're going to try to continue to fund this program out of general fund dollars. So taxpayers will just be on the hook for all these gifts of taxpayer funds to people with the right skin tone. So Republicans made this very logical argument. You know, because again, I can see where they're coming from. They probably didn't want this to become an argument about race because Republicans will always lose because Democrats will just paint them as racist, right? So they focused on the fiscal aspect of this. Except when you focus on a logical argument against a policy, as Republicans did, what are Democrats going to do anyway? They can't defend the policy. They can't defend the points. The very sound points that Republicans are making about the fact that we simply do not have money for this. So even if Republicans tried to avoid being called racist, Democrats called them racist anyway.
There is no doubt in my mind, Mr. Speaker, that the people in my community are asking for restorative justice. They are asking for us to repair the harms that previous members of this institution, and I would venture dare to say, Mr. Speaker, some current members.
400 years, 200 years, 100 years of discrimination? Maybe they might want to call me a monkey today, because I want to participate in our inclusive economy. This is getting ridiculous.
You guys, no one on the Republican side said anything even remotely racist. They avoided at all costs making this an argument about arguing against a race-based program, which, by the way, they would have been perfectly within their right to do, because it is a race-based program. It is discrimination. How many white people out there could really use help from the government when it comes to paying for a down payment on their home so they can become homeowners too? How many Jewish people who were discriminated against are excluded from this program? So Republicans did everything they could do not to make this a debate about race, and Democrats still turned around and said stuff like this.
Maybe they might want to call me a monkey today.
That's insane. That's State Rep. Jamila Taylor. And then you heard there in the earlier cut, Representative Christine Reeves saying, oh, this chamber has a history of discrimination, and dare I say, current members too. And she got gaveled for that, because you can't impugn the motives of the members. She got gaveled for it, but she still called Republicans racist for making sound fiscal arguments. This is going to get even crazier, too, so just buckle up. Buckle up, people. For making sound fiscal arguments about we cannot afford this. It won't be sustainable without additional taxpayer funds, and we can't do that right now. We have a $15 billion budget deficit, so we need to pick and choose our battles. Racist, you want to call me a monkey? That's about the nuttiest thing I've ever seen happen in Olympia, and that's really saying a lot. I feel like every week I have a new nuttiest thing that the Democrats do. Because again, they can't debate the bill on the merits. They can't justify the bill on the merits. Think about that. They want to gift people who have no clear ties to housing discrimination, who can't prove it, because maybe there isn't any clear tie for them or their family for housing discrimination. They want to gift them, on average, $120,000. Imagine that. Like, you've all been there, right? Trying to save for your first home. And how hard it is to save $120,000. And now if you're the right skin tone, if you have the right immutable characteristic, the state of Washington's going to cut you a check so you don't have to work and save and get by and pinch pennies. They're going to give you a check and you'll never have to pay it back. And for pointing out the absurdity of that in the middle of a budget crisis, not to mention the absurdity of it because it's just racist, Democrats turn around and accuse the Republicans of being racist because they can't justify the policy. That's shameful. It's disgusting, frankly. The monkey thing. You're going to call me a monkey? Oh, and you hear the gasp from the Republican side, like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What are you talking about? As I said, it gets crazier. So, okay, Republicans start to realize. I don't even know. What world is this that we're living in? Is this make-believe? Is this like some sort of scary dream? Republicans start to realize Democrats are going to pass this thing. They're going to pass it. There's no fiscal argument we can make that's going to convince them otherwise. So they're introducing some amendments to try to improve it, right? And one by one, their amendments are just getting rejected. Rejected. And then Representative Travis Couture has an amendment that seems very reasonable. And the amendment is that we are not going to give one of these massive gifts of funds to sex offenders. Here he is.
We would put them under the Covenant Home Ownership Program and then after 5 years forgive their loan? That's wrong. gifting public funds, a handout from taxpayers directly to somebody who has committed the worst of the worst crimes. This amendment is well in order, and I urge the body to adopt it.
That makes sense, right? Okay, you won't see reason on the other stuff, but let's just agree that if you're a registered sex offender, the taxpayers of the state of Washington are not going to pay your down payment on a home, right? Surely Democrats in the state aren't that crazy. Surely this is an amendment that they'll support, right?
The speaker's about to lock the roll call machine. The speaker has locked the roll call machine. The clerk will take the record.
Madam Speaker, there are 45 yeas, 51 nays, 2 excused.
The amendment is not adopted.
You guys. So now, and they passed the bill, by the way. So now if you're a black sex offender in the state of Washington, even if you're a level 1 deemed worst of the worst, high likelihood to reoffend, even if you raped a kid, you could be a child molester, but if your skin color is right, the taxpayers of the state of Washington will pay your down payment on a home for you. All in the name of equality. And if you dare question it, if you dare say, that seems a little ridiculous, well, you're a racist, and you might as well call the black lawmakers monkeys for suggesting as much. Can we fall any further into the abyss of insanity? Well, maybe, because right now I want to talk about pay for striking workers. So I went down to Olympia on Friday, and I was only going to stay in the morning. We don't have a show on Friday, so it was a good day to get down there. And then there were some bills coming up on the floor of the Senate and the floor of the House, and I thought, well, I'll stay to watch the debate on these. And one of them was Senate Bill 5041. We've discussed it on the show before, and this would provide pay for striking workers. It's something that Democrats tried to get passed last legislative session. They couldn't get it across the finish line because there were a few sane Democrats in the state Senate. Those Democrats are no longer in the state Senate, so now it's just chock full of absolutely insane people. So they want to provide unemployment benefits to workers who decide to go on strike. So as you know, our existing unemployment insurance program, so employers pay into it, and then if you're laid off, you lose your job through no fault of your own, you can access unemployment insurance. And so that's always been the idea, right? It's the reason why, like if you're fired for cause, you can't get unemployment benefits because you did something, you lost your job. That's not really our fault, right? So why should we have to prop you up and give you money? And so the same logic is here. If you decide to go on strike, you make that decision, and you're not getting paid as a result for X amount of time, why should we have to give you unemployment benefits? It makes no sense. Well, the reason Democrats want to do this is, of course, because they're in the pockets of the unions. The unions fund their political campaigns. The unions are the reason why we have such large Democratic majorities in Washington state. The unions are the reason these lawmakers keep their seats. And I'll tell you what, if the WEA or SEIU wanted one of these Democratic lawmakers out of their job, they'd be out of a job. That's how much power the unions in our state have. So this is going up for debate on the floor. And I'm thinking, okay, maybe cooler heads will prevail. This is just a really, really bad idea. It's very clearly about gifting public money to the unions. Like, it's very transparent, right? There's no other reason for it. And I was happy to see that at least one lawmaker called it out, Senator Ron Muzzol.
Article 8, Section 5 of our state constitutions forbids the gifting of public funds. This is pure and simply a gift by the legislature to supporters.
Yeah, one of many gifts. We talked about on the show how they're trying to give the Washington Education Association $70 million to continue to run a teacher training program that so far only graduated 12 people. And that's a gift. That's a gift to the most powerful union in the state that supports all of their campaigns. And that's what this is as well. You know, all of these major unions have strike funds. So they get the union dues, they're collected, and then that way, if you go on strike, you're still getting some money from the strike fund. But above and beyond that, if you are to extend unemployment benefits to striking workers, you strip the only motivation they have to come to the bargaining table in good faith. It's the financial motivation, right? It's like, I can't afford to be on strike for that much longer. The strike funds are being depleted. You know, members are getting antsy. They can't afford to pay their bills. They can't feed their families. And so there is a motivation to compromise, to come to the table and get everyone back to work. But you take that out and you're giving them unemployment benefits. Why would they end their strike until they get exactly what they want? So similar to the reparations debate, this debate was chock full of absolutely asinine statements from the Democratic Party. So Senator Rebecca Saldana was sort of the lead messenger on the Senate floor during this debate. And she, honest to God, said this.
Workers involved in a strike aren't really unemployed by choice. They're temporarily out of work as part of a legally protected event aimed at improving their conditions.
What? She says that workers who are on strike aren't unemployed by choice. God, I could swear, I'm not a member of a union, but I swear that union members have to vote to go on strike. Do they not? It was interesting when I watched that clip back, because I watched it on the floor, but I couldn't see her from, I was watching from a certain angle. So I went back and I watched that clip as you saw it on TVW. Pay close attention to the two Democratic senators sitting behind her, because even they know that's bullshit.
Workers involved in a strike aren't really unemployed by choice. They're temporarily out of work as part of a legally protected event aimed at improving their conditions.
They know it's absolutely nutty to say that workers don't go on strike by choice. They go on strike by the definition of choice. It's like democracy prevails and they vote on it. So that was just crazy. She also made this because I think one of the things that is going to happen, because they're going to pass this, the question is Bob Ferguson going to sign it? So what's going to happen is all the districts, all the school districts will go on strike. You watch July, August, into the school year in September. The teachers are going to go on strike. If we thought they went on strike too much already, which, by the way, under state law, they shouldn't even be going on strike, but they do anyway. Now they're getting unemployment benefits. The teachers are absolutely going to strike for this next school year if this goes through. And that was sort of one of the arguments that Republicans are making is, you know, this is going to hurt kids. You're going to have more strikes, etc. And Senator Saldana also offered up this gem.
There's no demonstrable impact that we have been able to find with data that shows any change in reading or math achievement, either in the year a strike is done or 5 years after a strike.
Yeah, she honest to God says that, oh, teachers striking doesn't hurt kids learning. We have no data that proves that. Yeah, but we have a brain, right? We have common sense. If kids aren't in the classroom, they're not learning anything. If teachers are on strike for an extended period of time, then kids are going to fall behind. And if they're not falling behind, that tells me you're not actually teaching them anything. And so why are they in the schools anyway? We don't need data to tell us that. It's just common sense. If kids aren't going to class, if they're not learning anything, if they're not going through their lessons, then yes, a teacher strike hurts the learning of kids. But she's just, of course, oh, well, we have no data that shows that. It's insane. So she was just wowing me on the floor with the way her mind works. So again, I think Republicans realized pretty early on, we're not going to be able to stop this. So let's offer some amendments to try to fix some clear flaws in the bill, right? And one of them is the fact that in this bill, again, Senate Bill 5041, these striking workers who are going to be collecting unemployment benefits, they will not be required to prove that during that time they're collecting unemployment benefits, they're looking for work, which is, of course, weird because everyone else who collects unemployment benefits has to show the state to continue to collect those benefits that they are out there, that they're applying for jobs, that they're going to job interviews. So Senator Curtis King introduced an amendment to add some parity there.
Under our unemployment, we have the unemployed individual has to be able and available and actively seeking suitable work. What this amendment would do is say that if you are a striking worker and you're getting paid unemployment, that you still have to meet that standard.
Right. That sounds fair. Democrats rejected it. Think about that for a second, okay? Think about that. You get laid off from your job. No fault of your own. You worked hard, company went under, whatever it is. You get laid off from your job. So you're going to access the unemployment insurance fund, which is what it's there for, which is why your employer that laid you off had paid into it, so that you have a little bit of buffer, a little bit of a soft landing, lost your job through no fault of your own. I'm sure many of you have been there. So you start collecting unemployment benefits, and you have to collect those benefits, you have to be out there looking for work. You have to be out there going to job interviews. That's fair, right? So you don't have someone sitting back on the couch off the government teat saying, hey, I'm going to just milk these unemployment benefits for as long as I can. So you have to do that. But a striking worker who now gets those same benefits as you because they made a choice not to go to work, they don't have to do that. Does that seem fair? It's a slap in the face to workers. You know, Democrats claim, oh, we're the party of workers. No, they're the party of unions. They're the party of, by, for unions, because unions keep them in office. They don't care about workers. They don't give two shits about workers. If not, they would feel the way that people with a brain feel, that this is deeply unfair to workers who work hard, who show up, who one day might lose their job through no fault of their own, and who, while collecting unemployment benefits, are out there actively looking for employment so they can get back to work. But if you're a teacher in a union, you can go on strike, you can collect money from your union's strike fund, and you can collect money from the taxpayers through unemployment insurance, and you can sit your happy ass at home as long as you'd like, screwing over kids, screwing over parents who have to pay for childcare, because there's no incentive in the world anymore for you to come to the bargaining table and get back to work. So let's do away with this lie that Democrats sell, that they are the party of workers. No, they're the party of whoever it is that will donate to their campaigns and keep them in office. And it's very clear. Now, I don't know if Bob Ferguson's going to veto this. I hope he does. I just don't see it. Again, because unions keep him in office too. Unions were the top contributors to his campaign for governor. You really think Bob Ferguson has the guts to veto this bill? So mark my word, it's going to pass. Ferguson's going to sign it. And then you better, as a parent, if you have kids in public schools in Washington State, you better damn well, as a parent, be prepared and be saving up to pay for extra childcare going into late August, early September, to have plans for what are you going to do with your kids, because they will not be in school, because your local school district will be on strike. Thanks, Democrats. All right, we have more madness to get to. There were so many things that happened. I was like, I don't know how long the show is going to be today, but we got to get to as much of it as we can. So while they were doing all this insanity, they were also dismantling your Second Amendment rights. So we'll talk about that coming up next. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Why? Well, in this climate, we all need to save more money because Democrats are basically making it impossible to exist in this state as a law-abiding, tax-paying citizen, and they're going to suck you dry. So why not save some money on insurance at least to compensate for it? FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. What they do with the First Mark Challenge, it's actually pretty cool. You schedule a little time to talk to them on the phone, and they're going to go over your current insurance. They'll go talk to you about your insurance needs. And then they'll go out and they'll shop their market of carriers for you. And they'll figure out if you are paying what you should be paying for your insurance and if you have the right insurance to cover your needs. And then they'll come back to you with their recommendations. And they might recommend, hey, you should stay with the insurance that you have. You actually have pretty good insurance. I hear from undivided viewers and listeners who say that's happened to them, where they were actually told, like, hey, you're doing just fine. Or they'll come back and they'll say, hey, we can save you thousands of dollars. That's what happened with Eric. He says they saved him 30% on his auto policy and a whopping 70% on his homeowner's policy. He said, I'm not exaggerating. I now tell anyone I know who's dealing with changes to their insurance to give First Mark a call. I did, and I'm truly richer for it. So don't delay. Don't dawdle. Is that the word? Don't dwaddle. Take the FirstMark challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right. So all the insanity happening in Olympia, and amid all that, in the wee hours of the morning, they decided to dismantle your Second Amendment rights. And there is a bunch of bills going on in Olympia that make it more difficult for law-abiding gun owners to exercise their Second Amendment rights. Well, we also simultaneously have bills like House Bill 1125, which lowers sentences for criminals who use guns. Figure that one out. So House Bill 1163, after a very long debate that was sort of cut in half because it went too late in the day or early in the morning, shall I say, it has passed in the House. It is the permit to purchase. You got to have a permit to purchase a firearm. Who knew? I didn't know when our founding fathers drafted our Constitution and all the amendments that followed that we would have to have permits to exercise our constitutional rights. I think I'm in trouble then, Nicole. Hi, Nicole. I think I'm in trouble.
Why?
I don't have a permit. And right now I'm exercising my First Amendment right, sans permit. Do you think the government's going to come for me?
Say or do the wrong thing that Democrats don't like.
Only a matter of time. This is why I always say, and I will say I bought my first firearm recently because Mike kept getting on me. Like, you've got to, before it basically becomes too difficult or to obtain to obtain one or too expensive, because now they're taxing all these things and adding taxes and stuff. You've got to buy a firearm. So I finally went and did it. And we went to, before I get to the reason why House Bill 1163 is unconstitutional, in case it's not clear. So we go to Cabela's. I think it was Cabela's.
Bass Pro.
Thank you. I love how Nicole knows where I went anyway. That's not where we ended up buying the gun, but we first went there. We waited there for 3.5 hours. And it was because of all these regulations.
Make it difficult.
You have to go there. And this is my first time going through this. I mean, those of you who have guns are like, duh, Brandy, we've been going through that for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, welcome to the struggle. You have to go there and you first wait a long time because everybody's going through all the paperwork and stuff. So first of all, before you even go, I know this sounds like I'm preaching to the choir, because again, you guys probably know this. Mm-hmm. You have to take this dumb little course online that's like a firearm safety course. It's totally worthless. And this is because Democrats passed this law where you answer a few questions about, and you read a few like dumb stuff. Like, don't point the gun at someone when it's loaded. You know, only put your finger on the trigger when you're ready to pull it, right? I mean, good to know, but also like, dumb stuff. And it's just another hoop you have to jump through. So you have to do that. You have to get your little piece of paper, you know, and then you bring it in. And we brought it in and we were in the line. 3.5 hours later, we get called up to the counter. You have to show them, you know, your little thing and your ID, which is all fine. And so then we actually went somewhere else and bought a gun. But you pick out your gun, right? And I had to order mine online, got shipped to the store. So I went back this weekend on Friday when I was down in Olympia, stopped by the store. Then you fill out your paperwork. And then I have to find time to go back down there in 10 days or whatever it is to pick it back up. And it's just like,
you have to go back again?
Yeah, because
to go back twice?
So when I was there, right?
Sheesh.
The gun I wanted wasn't in stock, so I had to order online. So I couldn't even start the process until the gun was in the store. So I had to go back. Gun was in the store. And then I had to fill out that little background check form. And then they're like, okay, we'll tell you when your background clears. So it's just insane. So I'm starting to understand the real hoops that you have to jump through to exercise your Second Amendment right. And now a permit to purchase. So I'm clearly not a gun person, so I'm going to let the gun expert explain to people, because I thought he posted a really good explanation. It was very simple. It's kind of similar to what I just said. Bill Kirk with Washington Gun Law posted a quick video explaining why House Bill 1163 is just very clearly unconstitutional.
Okay, so how unconstitutional is House Bill 1163 that just passed out of the Washington State House of Representatives? You know, the permit to purchase a firearm. Well, here's the best way to explain it to you. Go ahead and write these words down on a piece of paper. Mandatory training at a cost to the user and a license from government before you can purchase a gun. Okay, then to really best explain it, you just go ahead and take the last three words out of it, purchase a gun, and drop in any other constitutional right, such as vote, go to church, get a lawyer. Ask yourself, how reasonable, how lawful, and how constitutional does that seem to you?
Not very. So here's the other frustrating point here. And what I would say is, you know, there's been a lot of these gun laws that have been passed, and they end up getting caught up in the courts and stuff. And some of them are overturned, some of them are not overturned. It depends on what kind of judge you get and what kind of court it goes in front of. But we're in the middle of, as you know, and as we've said over and over, a budget crisis, right? So how many millions of dollars is the state of Washington, and you could apply this to the reparations program as well, which if someone challenges it, it will be overturned because it's unconstitutional. So not only are we wasting money on all these crazy programs, right? Well, we should be balancing the budget, but we're pushing forward bills that are blatantly unconstitutional and that the state of Washington will have to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars defending in court. And this one's very clear. I mean, this one is no doubt going to get overturned. But the thing is they just don't care. So they want to make a point. So they're going to make that point despite the fact that it'll cost taxpayers of the state of Washington millions of dollars when they go to defend it in court. So it's just insane. We'll have to catch up with Bill Kirk at some point and have him on the show to update us on all of the gun bills that have been going through in Olympia. But like my husband told me, if you're in the market for a new gun, you better go buy that freaking thing right now. Ammo too, because they're trying to levy that 11% tax on the sale of guns and ammo. So go stock up, buy your guns. And I would also say I need to go look back and see if this has an emergency clause on it, because off the top of my head, I'm not sure if it does. Hold on, let me just look really quick while I've got you guys, because I want to know, because that would make a difference, right? Because if it has an emergency clause at the end of it, sorry, scroll down, emergency, then that means that the second the governor signs it, it goes into law. I don't see one on here. I could be wrong, but so you need to look at those gun bills and the taxes and stuff. And if they have an emergency clause on it, the second the governor puts pen to paper, it's law. So you don't have the typical window where a new law goes into effect on July 1st. So you're like, okay, I'm going to stock up. I'm going to go do all these things. I'm going to buy a bunch of guns and ammo without the 11% tax and all these things. And then I know July 1st that ends. Well, some of these things, they put an emergency clause onto the end of it just to try to screw you over. Hold on, let me just double check here. I should figure this out. I'll talk to Bill about it, but something to know. Okay, another bill, and I know we're talking about a lot of legislation, but a lot of crazy stuff happened over the weekend. So we were kind of the first ones, I think, to talk about this insane bill, House Bill 1531. So House Bill 1531 is basically a requirement to push government propaganda on vaccines, and it's a bill that demands vaccine obedience. So this was put forth by Democrats. And it basically says that if the state and the best available medical evidence says that we need vaccine mandates, no local jurisdiction can stop that from happening. No local jurisdiction can pass laws or ordinances that go against vaccine mandates, that go against what state health officials want to do to deal with a communicable disease or another COVID situation. And you're also forced to spread the state's propaganda. And you can't produce, like, anti-propaganda. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't spend county funds, like, going against, on any sort of campaign, going against what the state is doing. It is a bill that demands 100% obedience when it comes to state vaccine mandates, state regulations, if we find ourselves in another pandemic. I mean, this is truly insane stuff. This is like communist China stuff. So this was up for a debate on the floor, and Republicans had some really powerful personal stories about vaccines as examples for why we need to allow some sort of latitude for exemptions.
I have encountered family members. You know, there's a father in Spokane that took his son to go get this vaccine because he felt that he was doing the right thing at the right time based on what science said at that time. His son is paralyzed, Madam Speaker. The father can't work. There's nobody stepping up to help their family. They're not stepping up on the state level. They're not stepping up on the federal level. What do I tell these families, you know, that I encounter, who not only, are very clearly in a situation where they're harmed, but Madam Speaker, they're double harmed because they can't even talk about the issue.
My cardiologist that I was referred to looked at my chart and says, oh, you had the vaccine. We need to send you in for an echocardiogram because that could be what's causing your problem because of an enlarged heart, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the state of Washington has recently made a terrible mistake, terminated many professional firefighters, law enforcement officers, our ferry workers that we have not recovered from because the state thought they knew better. They were wrong.
My medical license was threatened. I was given an ultimatum that I would not be able to support my family. And I knew that I was low risk. I had never had a heart condition before. I now have a cardiologist. I have periodic check-ins. And there is no reason for that except for palpitations that started about 72 hours after the first vaccine and put me in the hospital for the second. I now have a medical exemption, and I'll never take an mRNA vaccine again. However, I never should have had it in the first place because I had no risk factors. We need our health department to not mandate. We need them to inform and allow informed decisions.
Yeah, but they're going to mandate. This passed off the House floor early Sunday morning. It's just insane. So you now have the state, as if it didn't have enough power already. It wants to say, we know best, we're going to use best available medical science as if they followed the science back during the pandemic. I mean, even when the science was overwhelming that the vaccines were not going to be what they thought that what we were told they were going to be, they were not going to stop the spread, they were not going to get us out of the pandemic, they continued to push vaccine mandates, and that now they want to be trusted with more power, with more authority. They want to be able to produce their own, you know, vaccine propaganda and force localities, even in red areas of the state that aren't interested in these sorts of things, to push that out, to shove it down people's throats. And if you don't think that this isn't paving the path for the next pandemic, there to be a more widespread, strict statewide vaccine mandate, I mean, I just can't help you with that. Jim Walsh, the chair of the Republican Party after this passed, he pushed it out and said there will be mass noncompliance. And I agree, and there should be. There should be mass noncompliance if this happens again. But now this law will give them more power to go after people who won't comply. It's dystopian stuff. So, I mean, it was a rager of a weekend for Democrats, an absolute extremism bender, drunk with power, drunk on their majorities, eager to go further and further to the left, dismantling constitutional rights at 3 a.m., giving handouts to their cronies and allies in the unions, to the people who fund their campaigns, saying you can go on strike as long as you want because the people of Washington will pay you while you do it. Pushing out gifts of $120,000 to people based on their skin pigmentation, and now requiring, demanding complete vaccine obedience across every county in the state. The most extreme policies in the entire nation, maybe even the world, are happening right here in our backyard. And they're being pushed by the Washington State Democratic Party and its representatives. It's insane stuff, guys. We got to get people to wake up. All right, coming up next, speaking of insane, I don't know, where is Tom Homan? Where is Donald Trump? Because we have the chief law enforcer of the state of Washington, the attorney general, and the highest ranking official in the state of Washington, the governor, actively trying to help illegal immigrants avoid deportation. We'll have that coming up next in Unbelievable. First, I've talked to you guys a lot about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I ran into someone, a viewer who I won't throw her name out there or throw her under the bus, even though this is a great thing, who I saw again over the weekend, and she's lost 65 pounds. She lost 30 on East Side, and then she's like kept up the healthy routine, and she's down 65 pounds total. That's like a small human being. That's like losing a seventh grader. That's awesome. I was like, good for you. I've lost 40 pounds on the program, and I started my East Side journey about 2.5 years ago now. And this is the only time I've ever gone on a program or a diet where I've been able to keep the weight off. And it just opens you up to, I think, a different way of thinking about food. You don't have to eat any weird prepackaged meals or shakes or take any drugs or injections or anything. It just honestly teaches you what to eat in the right portions. And to me, that's been the only kind of program that's ever worked because it fits with your life. You're just cooking real food. You're eating real food. You're not like having to do all these wild things that you're never going to keep up for your whole life. And so I've met so many Undivided viewers and listeners who've lost a lot of weight on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I lost 30 of those pounds in 2 months. So it can be life-changing in a really short period of time. But not every weight loss program is right for every person. So if you've been hearing about it, thinking about it, the first thing you need to do is schedule time for a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. He'll talk you through the program and you can decide, hey, is this something I want to invest in or not? EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, even though every single segment that we've done on the show before could have been an unbelievable segment, let's dive into our actual unbelievable segment. We'll actually do two today, I think. Can we do two? Nah, it's one of those days. Time limits. I don't care about time limits. All right, so we know that Washington State is a sanctuary state, and there has been an insane amount of pushback to what President Donald Trump is doing hand in hand with ICE to get violent, criminal, illegal aliens out of our state and out of our country. And as we've said over and over on the show, I mean, every single day, ICE or Customs and Border Protection in Seattle and Washington State are putting out stories of illegal aliens they've arrested who committed crazy crimes. We should be celebrating. We should be dropping flowers at their front door. We should be giving them rounds of applause every day they leave on their shifts. We should be delivering baked goods to ICE. And, well, probably don't do that because then somebody's going to deliver them baked goods that are laced with something. So I'm going to take that back. We should be celebrating their hard work. And the state of Washington and the city of Seattle, police departments, sheriff's offices, they should be doing everything in their power to assist ICE in these efforts. We're talking about child rapists. Customs and Border Patrol was with DEA the other day. They picked up a guy who stabbed 4 people. They picked up a guy who was wanted for murder in Guatemala. You guys, we don't have to say we support local police going around and being immigration agents and asking anyone with brown skin to show them their papers and check their deportation or check their immigration status. I don't even want that. That's stupid. We have more important things to be going after. But people who have repeatedly come back in this country, who've committed violent crimes here, who've preyed on children, who've committed acts of domestic violence, who've assaulted law enforcement, who've killed law enforcement, because that has happened. Why are we not doing everything we can to help them? Well, it's because we're a sanctuary state and laws forbid it. Our law forbids it. You're forbidden. So state patrol can't help. Forbidden. In the progressive cities that have become sanctuary cities, police can't help. Forbidden. Jails in the counties can't help. Forbidden. So ICE is out there doing this difficult, dangerous work that we should all be applauding them for, completely on their own and completely blind, because they can't get the help of local law enforcement. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. And you know who is trying to make those jobs more difficult and more dangerous? The state's chief law enforcer and the governor. So Attorney General Nick Brown and former Attorney General and Governor Bob Ferguson are both pushing out this advice to illegal aliens in case they encounter an immigration officer. So Nick Brown, and they're the same, but we'll just show you both of them. So know your rights, civil immigration enforcement in Washington. And I know that they're going to couch this and say, well, everybody has constitutional rights and we're just informing people what their constitutional rights are. Like, you have the right to be silent. You can ask if you're free to leave. You have a right to, it says, you can say you'd like to consult with an attorney. You can ask them to leave. It's literally... Let them know you do not consent to a search. So it's literally going through a little checklist of if you're in the country illegally, how you can tell ICE to F right off. How you can tell ICE just to get out of your face and no, you can't search my home. And I get it. I love the Constitution. I love it so much. And I know that even people who are here illegally have constitutional rights in this country. I get it. But this sends a clear message that the state's chief law enforcer wants to thwart and make more difficult and dangerous the efforts of federal immigration officers to get dangerous people out of our country. And the same thing from Bob Ferguson. Know your rights. And he's got a picture on there of him shaking hands with someone holding a sign in Spanish. He's a man of the people, regardless of immigration status. So he has, again, it's just like a checklist. If an immigration officer approaches, you have the right to remain silent. You can ask them to leave. You can ask to see their court order or a warrant signed by a judge. blah, blah, blah. If you're arrested, detained, or taken into custody, talks about your rights. And then he says, what we're doing in Washington. And it lays out what they're trying to do. All public schools, courthouses, and public health care facilities must have policies for limiting immigration enforcement to the fullest extent legally possible to ensure these resources remain safe and accessible. So that's what he, I mean, he's just saying it right there, that we're trying to limit immigration enforcement to the fullest extent legally possible. And look, he's trying to couch it in, yeah, we're doing what we legally can do. But again, that does not mean that you're not making it more difficult for President Donald Trump to carry out lawful deportation efforts. And I've said, I don't know, there's so much gray area here. And I went on a big rant about this on the show last week. I don't need to go on another long rant about the same thing. But like in the city of Seattle, well, we're down, what, 700 cops right now? They should be overjoyed that ICE wants to come there and take the worst of the worst criminals off the street. Like, let me take that sex offender off your hands and send him back to Guatemala. Let me take that child rapist off your streets and send him back to Mexico. Should Seattle not be celebrating that at a time when they don't have the law enforcement numbers to do that? And they want to all act like, well, we're not interfering. We're just not going to help them. It's totally different. No, it's the same thing. Not helping them is interfering. And again, if they were asking SPD to stop every brown person and ask them for their papers, I would be out there protesting that. There's just no need for it. They don't have the numbers to do that. But that's not what they're doing. These are clear, targeted enforcement efforts against violent people that every single law-abiding citizen in our state should want off the streets. You're out there doing what you can, in the words of Bob Ferguson, to limit immigration enforcement to the fullest extent legally possible when they're trying to round up child rapists and killers, people who resist arrest, people who've committed 1, 2, 3, 4 DUIs, people who've been deported from the country and keep coming back, people who are slinging fentanyl on the streets. You know how many of these arrests from ICE and DEA and Border Patrol have been individuals who have convictions in our state for the distribution of fentanyl, the deadliest drug on our streets today that has killed people at record rates, including innocent children who come into contact with it? And those are the people who you're trying to limit immigration enforcement to the fullest extent legally possible against? Lost your damn mind. So Donald Trump, to the extent possible, needs to hold Tom Homan. First of all, we need you to double, triple down. Send us your best and brightest ICE agents on the streets. All those of us with sanity will throw them a ticker tape day parade. What is it called?
Ticker tape parade.
Ticker tape parade. We'll throw confetti at them and roses and applaud them on their mission.
I don't understand why it's taking us so long to get their attention.
Come on, Donald. What do I got to do? A little dance?
Oh,
I mean,
that might work.
He likes women. He likes women. I don't know if I'll give you a sexy dance. I'm not quite there yet. I can give you one of these. It's my standby. Walk like something like
Egyptian.
Yeah. That's the only dance I got.
Yeah, swim.
Can do the sprinkler. Whatever you want. Okay. What is it going to take? It's really crazy stuff. Let me see. Libs of TikTok picked it up. Maybe that'll get Trump's attention. I feel like that's what got the U.S. Department of Education's attention when we did that interview with Frances Stout, the female athlete who sat out. And then Libs of TikTok and the New York Post and Fox and Friends picked it up. And the next day, U.S. Department of Ed's like, we're launching a civil rights investigation. I mean, look, I understand.
I just love this picture.
I know, right? That's the nerdiest picture. Somebody told me he wears a wig. I'm like, that's not a wig.
I think it's just he doesn't get a haircut as often as you just a would little probably high up make on his your head there. 12-year-old.
Yeah, if that were a wig, I gotta have a conversation with him because you can get better wigs.
I think it's like it looks very similar to the one you wore for Halloween.
It does, which is still in my trunk, and I feel weird every time I see it. I'm like, I've just got a hairpiece back here. Right? What is it?
I saw a lot of people comparing that photo to Bill Gates because they look very similar. Yeah. And like, what's in the water up there?
Yeah, it's not good. So Libs of TikTok has paid attention, and I get it. I understand that President Trump's not watching Undivided 5 days a week, but he should be. So we need your attention. All right, let's give him a double dose of unbelievable today. I'm out of steam. Look, all the things I just discussed that are absolutely batshit crazy. And no, I'm not painted in a swear jar today. I get an exemption today because this stuff is so crazy. There's no other way to describe it. So I already know on the live chat, everyone's like, you're swearing a lot today. My husband just closed their ears.
You know what? I think they're over it.
They don't know. This is who I am. This is who I am. And I'm just going to keep going. So all of that stuff that I talked about, right? Yes, is the fault of the party in power. Like, these are people who are incredibly extreme. They're some of the most extreme politicians in the entire country. But I don't blame them as much as I blame the media. And I've said this many, many times. When you have the one entity that's supposed to hold them accountable failing to do so, then there's no check on them. And it becomes this sort of like, what is it? The positive feedback loop, right? Where it's like, they're
echo
not
chamber.
Hearing. Yeah, but it's like this feedback loop of, oh, the media says it's great. The media is not calling us out for it. So we must be doing the right thing. We got to keep doing it, right? So I really blame the media for it. And I think case in point is the constitutional amendment. We broke the news of this on the show last week. And this is as extreme as it gets. So now 28 Senate Democrats have signed on to this. There's only 30 of them. So virtually the entire Senate Democratic Caucus has signed on to Senate Joint Resolution 8204, which is a constitutional amendment. And I'll just read it again, as I discussed on the show. It says the state shall not deny or interfere with an individual's reproductive freedom decisions, which includes the individual's fundamental right to choose to have an abortion, the individual's fundamental right to choose to use contraception, the individual's fundamental right to choose to use assisted reproductive technology, and the individual's fundamental right to be free from discrimination on the basis of the individual's pregnancy outcome. Nor shall the state deny or interfere with an individual's gender-affirming care decisions. Okay? So they put forth this constitutional amendment, which, look, it needs a two-thirds vote in the House and Senate. As large as their majorities are, they don't have it. I'm not 100% sure what their strategy is here. Part of me thinks that they're putting this forth so Republicans have to vote against it, so they can come out and say, Republicans are transphobes and Republicans hate women. So I guess maybe they're doing it for that reason. But as I said, we need to turn the script on them. Because what they've shown through this constitutional amendment is that every single one of those Democratic senators support abortions up to birth, gender surgery at any age, and no laws mandating parental consent or notice. So that amendment says more about them than it'll ever say about Republicans. So I put this forth, and I was the first one to put that messaging out there, that, hey, let's flip the script. With this amendment, you're saying you want no restrictions on abortions whatsoever. So that means you can have an abortion up to the point of birth. You want kids as young as 8 years old to be able to cut their breasts off or their penises off because they want to be a different gender because they've been indoctrinated in Washington public schools and their parents don't even have to be told about it. And I got, oh my gosh. So this goes out there. And I'll just say, look, I don't expect everyone to automatically understand how a constitutional amendment works, or to understand automatically the argument I'm making, that their constitutional amendment actually does these very extreme things. So in a Facebook post that I put up about this, there were all sorts of people just down my throat. The amendment doesn't say that. Point to me where in the amendment it says abortions up to birth and da, 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 da. And so I took time to respond because, again, like, I get it. I took time to respond. And what I said to them on social media is the same thing I told you guys on the show when we broke this. Story is that the language in there makes it very clear that these are, according to the constitutional amendment, fundamental rights, and that the government shall not deny or interfere with them. The wording is very simple. It's very plain. The government, the state, shall not deny or interfere with these fundamental rights. So right there, because there's no other specificity involved, it renders every single law on our books that in any way denies or interferes with those fundamental rights unconstitutional. If this constitutional amendment passed, our current laws, which only protect abortion which ban abortion after the point of fetal viability, it would become unconstitutional. The laws that require for surgical interventions for youth, you have to have parental consent, it would automatically be unconstitutional. Now, it would have to be challenged, so it would take a lawsuit, but the very first lawsuit of someone, and it would take, what, all of 5 seconds for a progressive group, for Planned Parenthood, to sue over our abortion laws that then would be in conflict with our state constitution, and they'd win in court. So that's the way this works. The constitutional amendment says the state shall not deny or interfere and calls these fundamental rights. Therefore, any existing law on the book that limits, restricts, denies, interferes with those fundamental rights is null and void, unconstitutional on its face. And I'm not here to debate anyone about that. That's just true. That's how these things work. The constitutional amendment supersedes anything in state law. You know, people on social media want to have a debate with me about it. Like, look, I Googled it. Here's what Google said. That's great. Google's wrong then. I'm sorry. I'm right in this instance. I'm not having a debate with anyone about it because that is exactly what would happen. And if that's not the intention of Democrats, if that wasn't the intention of the 28 Democratic senators who signed on to this, then they need to clarify and they need to add language to that constitutional amendment. If they don't add language, then that is their intent. So again, I'm not arguing about it. That's just the truth. It's not something that's open to debate or interpretation. It just is what it is. So I see this headline come into my inbox. It was published by McClatchy, so it ended up in a few newspapers, unfortunately. This is from The Olympian. It's under their, they have a reoccurring thing called reality check. Okay, so this makes it in their reality check. The headline: are WA Dems trying to adjust the state constitution to allow, quote, abortions up to birth? And that's my line. I was the first one to put that out, that this allows abortions up to birth, because it does. So here's the first few paragraphs of this story. It says, reproductive freedom and gender-affirming care would be enshrined in the state constitution under a proposed Democrat-backed amendment that's dividing lawmakers along party lines. Republicans have lodged fierce objections to Senate Joint Resolution 8204, alleging that the suggested amendment would effectively allow abortions up to birth and gender surgeries for kids at any age. Again, those are my lines. This is literally a piece of journalism. Here's what it says. That's not the case, says the resolution's prime sponsor. State Senator Vedana Slaughter, a Bellevue Democrat, said SJR 8204 just adds what's already in state law into the Washington Constitution. Quote, I do think it's important as a healthcare professional that it be the right information that people get. And that deeply concerns me that that is not accurate. So this journalist, and there's nothing really else to the article. They quote a couple Republican senators saying, hey, I disagree. But nowhere in this article that's dubbed a reality check, do they a reality check on the claim made by the amendment's key sponsor, the Democratic state senator. They just literally extend their platform to her to say, well, that's not true, when it is true. It's 100% true. There's really no wiggle room. At the very least, this news outlet could have said, here is the argument being made, that this constitutional amendment would supersede existing state law and would, at the very least, set up a legal challenge to all of those state laws that regulate things like abortions, that regulate things like reproductive care. Instead, they just let the Democratic sponsor say, that's not true. And they expect us all to carry on with our day. And then they throw in a quote from Republicans just to sort of even it out, right? So what happens when a news outlet does that? When they, again, because they're publishing this in reality check. So to me, they're saying they're doing a fact check on my claim, right? Are Dems really trying to adjust the state constitution to allow abortions up to birth? Reality check, that's not the case, says the bill's prime sponsor. Yeah, you got to do a little more digging than that. Of course, the prime sponsor is going to say that's not true. So you have this media outlet, hard air quotes, and they just say, oh, it's good enough to just let the prime sponsor say that, and then we'll throw in a quote from Republicans. Well, what's going to happen when a reader reads that? What's going to happen? Most readers are going to say, well, Democrat said this and a Republican said this, so I'm going to believe the person who I'm aligned with. So Democrats read that article and came away with, oh, they're not trying to protect abortions up to birth. Republicans probably read that article and came up with, they probably are trying to get abortions up to birth because the Republican said so. And then the news, journalism outlet washes its hands of the situation and said, we did a reality check on this. You didn't do shit. You just gave the prime sponsor of the constitutional amendment your platform to claim that it's a lie when it's not a lie. No other, I mean, for the love of God, find a constitutional scholar if you don't believe me. Find a legal expert. And have them explain the situation. It's actually not a very hard legal concept to understand. I'm not an attorney. It's not a hard argument to understand. Because they don't list any sort of restrictions or allow any language that gives a little wiggle room to have restrictions. They simply say, the state shall not deny or interfere with these fundamental rights. What does that mean? Well, that means that the state shall not deny or interfere with these fundamental rights. That doesn't mean when you say the state shall not deny or interfere, except they're going to limit it in this way, in that way, in this way, in that way. No, that's unconstitutional. So that's what baffles me. It's not for any journalist. This isn't a difficult concept to understand. And it's not your job just to like, I love, you know, quote from both sides and you think that's enough. No, you're doing a segment called Reality Check. Tell people what the truth is. Don't just present what the Republicans say and the Democrats say and wash your hands of it. Help people understand how this works. The likely legal challenges, the complexity of the situation. This is lazy at best, intentionally misleading at worst. And shame on that senator for saying it doesn't do that. All it does, what'd she say? It just adds what's already in state law to the Washington Constitution. What are you talking about? State law right now is abortions are banned after fetal viability. Let me just read that constitutional amendment again. I don't see that in there, do you? State law right now is you have to have parental consent for surgical interventions for gender-affirming care. I don't see that in there, do you? So how can you literally let her just say in this article, it just adds what's already in state law to the Washington Constitution? It doesn't at all. And if that is the argument, I might say, if that's really all this does, oh, it just adds what's already in state law to the Constitution, then you're telling me it's unnecessary. You're telling me it's redundant. If it's already state law, why would you need to go through all this effort to add it to the state constitution? Because you're a liar. You're a liar, 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 liar. And the media lets you do it. So I believe this with every fiber of my being, and I'm not just saying it because I run a new media company and an independent show. Until legacy media is completely demolished and rebuilt, this state will not change. They are to blame more than the politicians for the state of things and for the extreme policies that continue to be pushed despite the outcomes that we've seen from those policies, because they don't hold them accountable. And they are the only entity out there that can truly hold them accountable in a way that would be significant. I mean, we can all do what we're doing. You can share things. You can talk to friends and family. And that's helpful. But the legacy media still has a vast audience. And they're reaching the people who need to hear this stuff the most. They're reaching the passive news consumer. The people who turn on the TV for 10 minutes, who read the paper a couple times a week. And they leave believing what's told to them on TV. Believing what they read in the newspaper. And so right now, the media in the state is just an extension of the Democratic Party, and they have no interest in critical thought. They have no interest in curiosity, and they have no interest in helping you or I understand the truth. So until the legacy media is demolished, nothing in this state will change. All right, we'll get to some national news, a little bit of a local tie coming up next. I know it's going to be a long show. I know, but it's Monday. I missed you guys over the weekend anyway. Our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is having another one of his Know Your Risk live webinars coming up on March 20th. So you've got some time to sign up, but I would recommend doing it as quickly as possible. He's going to be talking about the first 100 days of the Trump administration. And Lord knows there's a lot to talk about, but specific when it comes to the markets and your retirement portfolio, how are these decisions that Donald Trump is making impacting your retirement portfolio in the first 100 days, and then he'll do an analysis of sort of what's to come for the rest of 2025. So don't miss Zach's first 100 days live webinar. He's also going to talk about, he'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So it's just like running your retirement portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency. I think we could all use that, and kind of just a second opinion too. You've got this really critical thing. You only get one retirement. You don't want to screw it up. Zach Abraham and his team can help you out. So sign up for Zach's first 100 days webinar happening Thursday, March 20th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Register now, knowyourriskradio.com. And don't forget to watch Doge Watch with Zach and I. There'll be a new episode out tomorrow. We have a ton of fun talking about all things Doge. Okay, some national news. Is Donald Trump going to get rid of the Department of Education? I don't know. It seemed like it was imminent last week, and then they sort of backed away from it and said they're going to continue to review it. Meanwhile, the head of the National Teachers Union, Randy Weingarten, was almost in tears over the idea.
They're just taking opportunity away from kids that don't have it. So billionaires, kids of billionaires, they have it. They go to private schools. Everyone else, 90%, go to public schools. Don't take away their opportunity.
So let's stay on the facts.
Sorry.
No,
I'm
do
really
not apologize.
Angry about this.
No, because this
I'm
is
really
what
angry.
Need to hear.
I taught kids in Clara Barton High School in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah. So the U.S. Department of Education, if you did away with it tomorrow, it would actually give more control to local school districts, more control to the states to handle education. I mean, it doles out grants and all of those things, but her meltdown is totally misplaced. And obviously, you're going to see that meltdown from somebody who's the head of the teachers union. But we had on the Sunday show, on Sundays with Subscribers yesterday, Vicky Murray. So Vicky is Washington Policy Center's new director of the Center for Education, but she literally wrote a book about the nation's failing education system. And we talked to her about this idea of, you know, should Trump get rid of the U.S. Department of Education? What would it mean for our state? Here's a clip from our interview on Sundays with Subscribers. Donald Trump campaigned on eliminating the Department of Education. It seems like he's continuing to make steps in that direction. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
I think it's a terrific idea. We never needed a Department of Education. Look at our neighbors to the north, Canada. They do very well. High immigration, all of this. It's handled at the provincial level. They don't have a Ministry of Education. We could easily get rid of the Department of Education right now. And people are concerned about what about this program, that program. I actually wrote a book on how to do it with a blueprint called Failure, the Miseducation of America's Children. Hmm. It's very simple. First thing we do is all the constitutional programs, for example, like the Office for Civil Rights, Veterans Affairs, all of this, we put those back into pre-existing departments, Veterans Affairs, the Department of Justice. As far as the federal government being a bank or sort of an intermediary between private loans, no, that should be privatized. The government doesn't have good financial literacy, financial sense. I don't want them in charge of that kind of finance. So the rest of it, all the programs and so forth like that, we have state departments of education. Devolve all the programs, all the grants down to the state departments of education. Those grants will typically run 1 to 5 years. Doesn't matter where we are in those life cycles of those programs. Once they're nearing the end of their life cycle, put it before the voters, because it's going to be a tax. Vote for a tax up or down. Then you're done. And we do have a president whose background is perfectly suited to sell the property in D.C., make a pretty penny, and return that money to the taxpayers. What we're seeing in the news now that people are concerned about, and as a researcher, I'm concerned about too, the Institute for Education Sciences, the National Center for Education Statistics, the statistics gathering.
Yep.
We could put that in census. But I, for one, even though I do like the fact that it makes my job a lot easier, there's nothing stopping states and using a federal system to get together, use best practices, and let's continue that good work that way. But it would be less susceptible to politicization. And here's a challenge I'd like to issue. And this was a recommendation back in the 70s as an alternative to a department, a big bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. Why don't we just get a catalog of all the programs? Are they working or are they not? That didn't fly. You want to know why? And I have to check this. I haven't had the chance to check this, but at the time when I wrote my book a few years ago, there does not exist a uniform definition of what a federal education program is. So if we can't define it, how can we measure whether it's working or not?
Yeah.
So we really don't know. I think the states are much better equipped. And here's the beauty part of that. Not only do we get better policy, we won't eliminate it entirely, but we can really minimize the politicization, because all of these rent seekers, all of these folks, for example, like various unions, that go to Washington and just have to go to one place, you're now have to going to try and influence 50 states. So I think for that reason alone, that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, it was a fascinating conversation with Vicky Murray. And we talk also about sort of the you know, empowering parents and school choice and comparing what happened in Arizona, where, you know, two decades ago, they were kind of in the same position we are, and now they've dramatically expanded school choice. So I highly recommend watching the conversation. You can watch the full interview with Vicky Murray coming up on, yesterday on Sundays with subscribers. I'm like, what day is it? It's Monday. It happened yesterday. If you're not a subscriber, you can sign up undividedpod.com. We do in-depth interviews every Sunday that you can check out on that show on interesting, unique topics. I also want to note, just because we're on this subject, there was some interesting news out of the Freedom Foundation. So our state, you don't have to be a member of the teachers union if you don't want to be. And look, you're still going to be get the benefit of their bargaining or whatever it is. But if you don't believe in what the teachers unions are doing, I mean, God knows they're very extreme in Washington. You don't have to be a member of the teachers union, and there are other states where that's the same. So the Freedom Foundation announced that it has just formed kind of an alternative to traditional teachers unions. It's called the Teacher Freedom Alliance. They're calling it a non-union alternative for educators. They say over the past 2 years, Teacher Freedom Alliance and the Freedom Foundation has brought together more than 500 educators from 35 states, providing a platform to educate teachers about their First Amendment rights for union representation and the various resources available to them. The Teacher Freedom Alliance is bringing teachers together from all over the country to restore education and make the need for teachers' unions obsolete. Love that. So if you're one of those teachers that doesn't want to be a member of your local crazy teachers union or the WEA, check out the Teacher Freedom Alliance. So saw that, thought it was interesting. Now, our Daily Show poll today, some of you have probably already said, Brand, you've asked us this before. And I think I have, but sometimes I like to, as things change, especially in the Trump administration, you know, something that comes up on a campaign or whatever it is, I like to see how public opinion shifts on things. So I asked you guys, would you support abolishing the U.S. Department of Education? Yes or no? Nicole, yes or no? Would you support abolishing the U.S. Department of Education?
Well, I think it makes me nervous for the same reason it makes everyone else nervous, is the school system here in Washington and not being held accountable by the nation, I guess. But after listening to Vicky's explanation, yeah, it makes sense that it's kind of a waste and we just need to get a grip around here.
Yeah, I'll say I was kind of unsure until I listened to Vicky. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that would be true is, you know how Donald Trump is holding, and Vicky and I talked about this on Sundays with subscribers, he's holding federal funding over the head, mm-hmm, of Washington schools. If he gets rid of the U.S. Department of Education, that stick goes away. You can't hold the federal funding over their heads if the U.S. Department of Education no longer exists. So that's one of the interesting elements. But she said, look, they shouldn't have had that power anyway. So that was interesting.
It might explain his delays.
But yeah, maybe that's why he's delaying, because right now he's he told the governor of Maine that either you stop this boys and girls spaces or you're not getting any money. Well, if you get rid of Ed, then you can't tell them that. The threat doesn't work. So let's go over to locals for comments today. Todd Welch, the layers of education bureaucracy should be eliminated. If Congress wants to provide a level of education funding to the states, then they can do so in block grants, which allows the states to better use that funding for local use. We have already elected a state superintendent of instruction and local school board officials, so any elimination of others is positive. Bill Biz says, I haven't heard from Bill Biz in a while.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Department of Education is simply a biased propaganda tool, policy SB controlled at the local level. Weisscastle, yes, I agree with your guest. Keep control and funds as local as possible. Whatever Trump wants to do by cutting off funds, a Democrat president can undo with the same threats. Yeah, it's a good point. I also was sort of worried about, God, though, do I want to give, and I think this is what you were alluding to, Nicole, do I want to give more power to Washington, mm-hmm, State with schools? Because things are nutty here and our schools are not doing well. Dr. Sarah says, Brandy, it needed to be abolished yesterday. I'm realizing it's a propaganda arm used by leftists to indoctrinate our kids. For the sake of maintaining the sanctity of the family unit and a civilized society, it needs to go. And I think that's underscored by what Randy Weingarten said in that like almost tearful thing. If the head of the National Teachers Union is so opposed to it that she's close to tears, chances are it's a good thing, right? Chances are it's like a very good thing. Whatever the head of the teachers union cries about will do the opposite, right? Greg, I think this department is used by leftists to undermine American society, undermine parents, and give money to leftist groups like the Washington Education Association. Amen. Okay, we had another national story, but I'm going to couch it for tomorrow because we're already 20 minutes late and we still got stuff to do. If you're thinking about selling your home this year, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Look, check out a few real estate agents. Ask them what they have to offer you, okay? What is the quote? Ask not what your real estate agent can do for you. Ask what you can do for your real estate agent, but reverse it, okay? But reverse it. I don't know. I tried. I tried to make it interesting and unique. Nicole's giving me a look like, just move on. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. What I'm trying to say is compare a few real estate agents. Look and ask, hey, what can you do for me that other real estate agents can't do? And Wes is going to give you a whole list of things, starting with his Listing Boost Concierge service, which is just really cool. He can help you upfront manage projects if you need to make some cosmetic upgrades to your home. And then you wouldn't even have to pay for those projects until closing. So if you're worried about coming out of pocket a bunch of money and that just adds stress to the situation, have no fear. Wes can help you with that. And Wes also says that right now, so March and May, these are going to be top months of the year to list a home. And there's low inventory, but there's not low buyer demand. And so this is actually a really good time to list your home because there's that pent up demand and they're just jumping on good homes that hit the market. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, we'll do some other comments in here. Baron, new Wall State motto, don't like it, sue us. That should be it. That's good. Don't like it, sue us. I mean, they know they're going to get sued over this stuff. They don't care. Old Sub Sailor, $10 super chat. Washington State is so lost, I have to wonder if it will find its way back to common sense. The Dems can say and do whatever they want in Olympia with no repercussions. How sad. I think if you could effectively message to enough people that the state is giving black first-time homebuyers $120,000 apiece toward a down payment, there are a lot of young people in particular who have had to work and save and struggle to buy their first home. I think they would find that deeply, deeply unfair, even progressive. So there's some things that just has to be messaged right by the right people to enough people to sink in. A $20 super chat from someone without a name. They have a name. Are the Democrats trying to force the common sense people to move out of Washington State? I saw a lot of that this weekend, especially from the 2A crowd.
That's from H, by the way.
Oh, from H. Hello. Thank you, H. I saw a lot of that from the 2A crowd. Like, it's time for me to leave. And I don't want to see that. I don't want people to leave the state. That makes me sad. CP, we need more representatives with common sense. But as someone with common sense, I think I would explode in anger at every single session. Could never do that. I mean, even just sitting there for a little while, like, trying to, you know,
it's wild,
appreciate decorum, like, you know, I can't laugh out loud at some of this stuff, but I really wanted to.
There's a couple legislators that text us in the middle of the night because I don't blame them. What else are you going to do? You're sitting there helpless as this nonsense is being spouted in the middle of the night.
Yeah, just wild.
It's crazy.
Let's see. Greg, truly wish that people in our government had one thing you rarely see anymore: integrity. I agree. The whole monkey thing. What are you talking about?
It's trying to shut up
right
the other side. Like, yeah, it's just like, oh, can't go there because I threw this in there.
Yeah.
So it's just a...
my nose itches.
It's becoming ridiculous because... or it's been ridiculous, but
yeah,
it's not working anymore because people are so...
yeah.
They're so used to it now.
Right.
This tactic that they think it's going to just shut up the other side, it doesn't work anymore because it's not true and it's not...
and you have to not care. And I don't think anybody cared. They're like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. And you heard Republicans like, whoa, man, it's not going to stop them from pushing back. But I think you're right. Is they're just used to like, oh, you're racist. And then people just sort of, okay, I'm sorry, my bad.
Whatever you want.
Let's see. Rick, unemployment, striking pay. One of those senators in the background was Drew Hansen. He laughed because he's a lawyer and knows exactly how untrue the statement was. Wasn't it funny, though, to watch their faces? They're like,
oh geez.
But I think they both still voted for it. I believe it was all the Democrats. I don't know if any dissented. I have to double check. But I was there, but I thought it was all the Democrats. Mm-hmm. So if I'm mistaken, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure it was along party lines. On the vax bill, just nuts, propaganda, dystopian, communist China stuff. Joanne Moore, they can shove those vaccines where the sun don't shine. Cold day in hell when they ever try to give me those vaccines.
I think it
I
is.
I love that.
I know, I do
too. Oh, hell yeah.
I do think that this is having the opposite effect of what they intended. Because if you are... actually worried that there's going to be a worse pandemic that will actually do more harm than COVID.
Yeah.
Then you've now got people absolutely on the other side that were maybe willing to look at the, you know, instance by instance, the whatever pandemic that came up. They might actually look at it and say, hey, you're right, this might infect somebody else, maybe I'll consider this vaccine. Yeah. Now you've got people absolutely not.
Nope.
Not happening. Chase me down with a needle.
You were never willing to you always, they always want to talk about best available science, right?
Right.
We're going to follow the science. You never followed the science. So again, and you say no it perfectly too, is like, if you had just had a little humility, mm-hmm. and you had just had a press conference saying, we were wrong. Wow, we were wrong. But Jay Inslee would never do that. The Department of Health would never do that. So that shows me that you're not concerned with the science. You're concerned with optics and politics and all of these things. So now I can't trust you to make a decision that is in line with science. So I'll never let the state ever again tell me or mandate or tell me and convince me I got the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had. And I never got, by the time the boosters came around, I had woken up to that. Mm-hmm. Grift. But I mean, that's like, you know, that's forever. I can never take that back, and I blame myself more than anyone.
And those stories that we played today, they're powerful stories. There are people that were really injured,
right.
I mean I know people, there are people that were very injured from the vaccine, and you can't just absolutely ignore those experiences. So
it's
just ridiculous.
I like Joanne though. I like it. Shove those vaccines with the sun don't shine. It's a cold day in hell when they ever give me those vaccines. Huckleberry G on guns. 3D printers will start trending. Yeah. Rick and Vicky and the criminals will follow these laws. Funny. Yeah, no.
It's comical.
They're simultaneously reducing punishments and restrictions for criminals. So it's nuts. I mean, if you actually care about gun crime and stopping shootings, why are you supporting bills like 1125 and 1178? Why are you right now debating a bill that if you're a juvenile and you murder two people even, that's too far. Two mm-hmm. people you can get out of jail at the age of 24. So they don't care. They don't care about gun crime. They don't care about shootings and murders. They just don't want Republicans to have guns because they just genuinely hate you, and guns give you joy, and they don't want you to have that joy, and they don't want you to be able to defend yourself because they want a society that is completely beholden to government. So they want you to crawl to the government, to beg the government to be able to keep your family safe and protect you and increase taxes and give up civil liberties and all these things. It's by design. It really is. It took me a long time to understand that, by the mm-hmm. way, probably longer than it should have. Gray matter, foreigners on visas, students vacation, student vacation work, etc., have constitutional rights, not illegals. They aren't subject to the jurisdiction of the Constitution. I disagree. I think that they do. People have told me that before, but you are subject to the jurisdiction. That's the reason we can arrest an illegal immigrant and put them on trial for murder. I mean, there's an illegal right now that's facing trial for the death of a Washington State Patrol trooper. That is subject to the jurisdiction here. So, for instance, if you're looking at, I'm trying to think of like an example of someone who wouldn't be subjected to our jurisdiction, like someone with diplomatic immunity. Right.
Okay.
I guess technically that's an example of someone who, like, they could break the law and not get in trouble for it. Right. But if you can break our laws and be prosecuted for breaking our laws, you are subject to the jurisdiction of the Constitution. So I just disagree. Brian Manzo, libs of TikTok, just posted about Nick Brown suing the Adams County Sheriff's Office. The rest of the country needs to hear about the continued insanity going on in Washington.
That
what?
Happened during oh, our you show.
Have
so I have.
Oh, it did. Mm-hmm. Oh, you've got it right here. Libs of TikTok. Nick Brown, the Washington State Attorney General, has filed a lawsuit against the Adams County Sheriff's Office for cooperating with federal immigration agents. That's that sheriff that said, hey, ICE, come on down. We'll help you out.
Right.
This is how desperate they are to keep criminal illegal aliens in your neighborhood. Dang. And that's, again, Nick Brown. Is there anyone more disappointing than Nick Brown, who sat here a couple feet from me, pretended to be this moderate, and then went on the same bender as Bob Ferguson, just Bob Ferguson 2.0. Again, you don't have better resources. You don't have a better use for your resources than to go after a sheriff, a law enforcer, who wants to help ICE get violent criminals out of the state. Again, you should be applauding them. You should be on the phone. How can we help? Nick Brown should be on the phone to Donald Trump. Hey, if you just want to focus on the real violent criminal illegals, how can we help? That's what they should be doing. But instead, they're suing to stop the sheriff from helping ICE. Donald Trump, Tom Homan, please. We're begging you. We really, really need your help here. And we need a damn good United States attorney for the Western District of Washington. All right. Great comments, you guys. Sorry, we're just going late. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Here's how broken Democrats are. They're actively out protesting something they used to celebrate. Electric vehicles. So you know that there have been protests outside Tesla dealerships. I saw this crazy video the other day of this protester running alongside a Cybertruck, slamming on the window. And of course, those Cybertrucks are tough, so it probably didn't do any damage. And a little weak fist of a progressive man didn't do much damage either. But just losing their minds. Like breaking windows at Tesla dealerships, occupying, losing their mind about electric vehicles. They used to celebrate Tesla and Elon Musk, but now it's Elon Musk. And so screw these electric vehicles. And in Seattle, they're lighting them on fire.
I went to the side window, I looked out, and the flames were just pouring out.
Over the weekend, Seattle firefighters battled flames shooting out of a white Tesla Model 3 in North Seattle.
I tell you, that firefighter was courageous. He went up to the vehicle in flames.
Oh my gosh, a Tesla Cybertruck is on fire. All right, there's a fleet of Cybertrucks right now. Unbelievable. Seattle fire on the scene.
Lighting electric vehicles on fire because they hate Donald Trump and Elon Musk that much. Apparently, their hate for Donald Trump eclipses their love of the environment. And that has been your closing sanity check for today. If you have not signed up to support our show already, this is how we do this awesome show. 4 days a week. Somebody was saying, Brandy, you don't do the show 5 days a week. Yes, we do. We do a show on Sundays, exclusive for subscribers. So if you want to join us 5 days a week and support our work to eclipse the mainstream media, to put them in their place, to tell the truth about these policies, where else, Nicole? Where else are you going to get that in-depth of an analysis of the weekend's events in Olympia? Nowhere. And we do it for $5 a month. What a smoking deal. That's a bargain. Mm-hmm. After taxes, it's more like $3 a month, really.
Well, they're paying $5.
Taxes and fees. Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Good, Nicole. Thank you. All right. Anyway, you can sign up at undividedpod.com. Really good point. Undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show for $5. We make it pretty simple. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow. Lots of good stuff to talk to you about.